Muted.
Hello, and welcome to today's Kenmare Resources first half 2017 results presentation. Throughout this, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards, there'll be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this session is being recorded. Today, I'm very pleased to pass you over to Michael Carvill. Michael, please begin.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thanks everybody who's here in the room for attending. Thanks everyone for spending the time to listen in on the telephone. You're welcome to Kenmare Resources H1 2017 results presentation. My name is Michael Carvill. I'm the MD of the company. Here in the room with me are Deirdre Corcoran, Finance Controller and Company Secretary of Kenmare, and Jeremy Dibb, Corporate Development and Investor Relations of Kenmare Resources. On the phone from Mozambique is Tony McCluskey, Finance Director. Tony has been down in Mozambique showing the Minister of Mines around our project site and is en route back. We also have on the phone Ben Baxter, Chief Operations Officer, and Eamonn Keenan, Marketing Manager of Kenmare. I am going to give a few quick slides and a few introductory remarks. Deirdre will give the main results presentation. I'll present a couple of slides on outlook and market, and then we'll throw the meeting open to whoever would like to ask questions. If we could just turn to slide three. Jeremy, I think you have control of the system there, which is a highlight slide. I suppose just to pick up the key points from the results, the H1 results, and ilmenite production at 504,800 tons of ilmenite is significantly up. That production, combined with production from H2 2016, means that in the last 12 months, we have produced more than 1 million tons of ilmenite, which is quite a watershed for Kenmare. We don't believe that it's the capacity of the mine has been topped out, but it's a record, and it's an important milestone as we pass through the 1 million tons in 12 months mark. Our zircon production is also up 32% at 37,700 tons of zircon produced in the half, and that's done with lower cash cost per ton at $131 per ton, which is 14% drop year-on-year in terms of cash cost. Our EBITDA is $30 million. That's up from a negative $10 million in first half 2016, so it represents a $41 million swing. That has been enabled by a very positive market environment, which again also has allowed us to reduce our net debt down to $39 million. That's been based on both a good production, low cost, and a very positive market environment where our ilmenite prices have increased 61% year-on-year, and our H2 contracts. A lot of our supply is delivered under multi-year volume contracts where we renegotiate the price twice a year. We renegotiate the price before the start of the year and then before the start of the second half. As prices go up, there's naturally a lag that occurs since we renegotiate at the start of the period, and there's an upward gradient in the meantime. We're pleased to say that the negotiated prices for the second half are up on those numbers that you see in the results. Our zircon prices are also up year-on-year, and we have seen improvements in zircon prices post the year-end or post the end of the half. Zircon prices are continuing to improve. Zircon volumes are improving also with improved demand and a reduction in the inventory worldwide. It's a positive environment for zircon. If I just turn to the next page, operating review. You can see on the graph on the top left-hand side that there's been a gradual improvement in production, with the darker bars being ilmenite and the orange bars being zircon. That's to a large extent a consequence of increased utilization of our mining plants. That increased utilization is a function of improved mechanical availabilities. That's better maintenance procedures, better supply of spare parts, better training of the artisans, and also very significantly stable electricity. Stable electricity has been a big enabler of the improvements in the project or in the overall project over the last several halves. So that has allowed us to produce 18% more heavy mineral concentrate from our mining operations. So that higher production plus the usage of some heavy mineral concentrate stockpiles has allowed the mineral separation plant to operate steadily, and again with stable power produce 25% more ilmenite and 32% more zircon. And that has all been done with better safety statistics. So we have improved our lost time injury frequency rate from 0.37 to 0.23. And, you know, those numbers are very good numbers, we believe, and we're very pleased with them. So on the top right-hand side, you can see the consequence of all of that in terms of EBITDA, where we go from, a negative EBITDA of minus 10, H1-16, to an improved and positive H2-16, and then a further improvement to $30 million of EBITDA in H1-17. So what does that all mean in terms of guidance? I'm turning to slide 5. Our guidance that we issued at the start of the year was for 950 to 1.05 million tons of ilmenite. We believe that we will end up inside that guidance range. Zircon, we guided between 72 and 83,000 tons of zircon, and again, we believe that we will end up in that range. A large focus of our activities on site is to improve the recoverability of zircon to high-quality products, primary zircon rather than secondary zircon. It's a big focus. We have several projects oriented towards exactly that. So the ratio of primary to secondary might change a little bit as we go through the year. And if you move zircon from primary to secondary, from secondary to primary, you get a little bit less zircon, but you get more value because it's a much more high-value product. Our rutile guidance is between 9 and 10,000 tons, and that's all to be done within total cash envelope of $130 to $144 million, giving a range of cash cost per ton of between $120 to $132. And so we believe that we are tracking for guidance and are happy to believe that we will be able to achieve those guidance numbers. With that, Deirdre, could I hand over to you, and you can perhaps give a guide more detailed analysis of the financial results itself.
Thank you, Michael, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Moving on to the detail of the financial results, and I'm starting on slide 7. We set out on this slide some of the key financial metrics in terms of performance for the first half of 2017, and we see throughout those metrics that we've had a strong performance across all of them. Our total final product production has increased 26% on the first half 2016. Our revenue for the period is up 82% to $102 million on the figure for half one 2016. And that's a combination both of volume increases and price increases, particularly in ilmenite, but also in zircon that we've seen realised in the period. Our cash costs per tonne at $131 per tonne are down 14% on the period in 2016. And that's as a result of increased production volumes combined with effective cost management that we've continued through that period. These have all contributed to an increase in our EBITDA. So our EBITDA for the first 6 months is $30 million. That's an improvement of $41 million on the figure for the first half of 16, which came in at a minus $11 million. And our net profit similarly has improved $9 million in terms of net profit for the period, an improvement of $56 million in the first half 2016. And in terms of net debt at the end of the period, we're at $39 million in terms of net debt. That's a $6 million reduction on the figure in the balance sheet at the end of December 2016. So strong performance across all of those measures coming through there. On slide 8, we've set out the income statement. And we can see in terms of revenue, as I touched on, the 82% increase represents a volume increase, an average volume increase of 21%. We've seen a greater weighting of that increase in terms of zircon, which is up 51% in volume terms, while ilmenite is up 19% volume on H1 2016. our average price increase is 50%. And again, in terms of weighting, the ilmenite price increase that Michael mentioned earlier in the period is 61% of the price increase in ilmenite pricing through in H1 2017. And we've seen an increase in primary zircon of 5%. Our cost of sales and other operating costs at 87.4 million, that's an 8% increase on the previous period and is largely a function of the increased sales volumes that we've seen come through. Included in the figure is a depreciation charge of just under $15 million, and there's also a 3.7 million non-recurring cost which relates to arbitration costs in the period. The arbitration case is now closed out with the determination of costs that came through last week, and so we won't see any future costs coming through in terms of that item on the income statement. The operating profit for the period at $15 million is a 40% improvement on the previous period. And the net finance costs at 3.4, a significant reduction on the first half 2016 costs, down 84%. And that reflects the restructuring that was completed in July 2016 when we reduced the debt levels. We've now significantly lower debt levels, $100 million of debt at a lower debt cost. So the financing costs coming through the income statement have reduced accordingly. And our net profit for the period is $9 million, a $56.5 million improvement over H1 2016. Slide 9 goes through revenue in a little more detail and breaks out the shipment and price analysis to give you more of an insight into the underlying performance for the period. The graph on the left-hand side charts shipments on a half-yearly basis, the green columns being the ilmenite volumes, and then the primary and secondary zircon are shown. And we see an increasing trend in terms of volumes of shipments period on period. There is a lumpiness to the sales that we do, and we are subject to timing of shipments getting away. So some shipments can slip into the next period, and we sort of see that through from H1 16 to H16. But in general, an increasing trend on volumes as production has increased and market strengthened. So H1 2017, we've seen ilmenite volumes up 19% and primary zircon volumes up 46% on the first half 2016 figures. Pricing is shown on the right-hand side of the chart. Our ilmenite prices are charted in the orange line, and you see there where the price low point came in H1 2016, and we've seen a price recovery come through in H2 16 and again in H1 2017. And similarly for zircon pricing, but at a more moderate level. As Michael mentioned, it's important to note that the prices that we realise are a combination of contracted prices and spot prices. And as we negotiate prices on a 6-monthly basis in a rising price environment, there tends to be a lag in terms of the realisation of those prices coming through. So we have seen a price uplift come through in H2 2017, and in terms of prices contracted for ilmenite and zircon in H2 2017, we'll see further price increases achieved in that period. Moving on then to slide 10, cash operating costs. This slide sets out a reconciliation of the costs in the income statement to our adjusted cash operating costs. So taking off non-cash items to get to our cash operating cost figure, which comes in at 71.4 million for the period. That's 7% of an increase on the H1 2016 figure. But with increased production volumes, with production volumes up 26%, we see a net reduction in our unit cash costs of 14%, so coming in at $131 per tonne for the period compared to $153 in H1 16. So the effect of increased production together with cost management continuing through the period has seen that reduction come through in our unit costs, which we're pleased with. Slide 11 sets out unit cost on a historical basis and is given there in terms of showing the performance improvements we have achieved on unit costs over the years, so from 2013 through to date, with increasing volumes and cost discipline and cost efficiencies being driven through at the mine, we've seen our unit cost come down. The orange line where it forks, that indicates the cost per tonne per the guidance issued in January 2017. So the 2017 volume of production is the guidance figures we've issued, and the cost per tonne range is indicated on that chart. In the first half of the year, in terms of costs, we have seen a strengthening of the metakai and the rand to some degree against the US dollar. We had seen a weakening come through in 2016. It has reversed to some degree, and in terms of costs, that's coming through in terms of the numbers for the first half of the year. And as I've mentioned earlier, there are some non-recurring costs included in that figure in relation to the arbitration. In terms of savings, we have a sustaining capital programme in place, and that includes the replacement of some of our heavy mobile fleet at the mine. And as that mobile fleet is replaced with our own vehicles, we will have rental savings that come through. That's on a phased basis, so there will be some further savings coming through on that in H2 2017. And we're also looking at our procurement strategy at the mine and seeing if there are further efficiencies to be brought into that process that may result in savings going forward. Then moving on to slide 12, the net debt. Set out the net debt at the end of December, compared at $45 million compared to the debt at the end of June at 39. So we have a $6 million reduction in the net debt figure over the period. Our operating cash flow for the period was $30 million US dollars. We had additions to our property, plant and equipment, $9.5 million, and some increases in our working capital over that period as well. Our inventories increased, which is a mixture, but we've increased our critical spares levels that we've held on site, so $3 million of that increase relates to an increase in critical spares, which helps in terms of the efficiencies of the business, ensuring that we have the right parts on site to increase utilisation levels in the event of breakdowns. Our trade receivables and prepayments have increased by about $5 million. And a significant part of that relates to trade receivables. There is a lumpiness to that figure period on period, but contributing to that increase is to the extent that we have had cash availability in the project companies, we've had less need to factor invoices, which we would have done in the past. So that results in some increase in that trade receivables figure at the end of the period. And our interest payments in the period were $3.4 million. So that gives you the bridge between the two and explains the net reduction of $6 million in the period. Slide 13 sets out the balance sheet. I've covered in the last slide the key components in terms of the asset movements and liability movements through the period, and there's nothing particularly unexpected in the numbers to June 2017. So I don't propose to dwell on this slide too much. To note in terms of the bank loans figure, just to expect $100 million. The $102.8 million on the bank loans is because we have accrued interest to the period end. So our payment dates for interest fall on the 1st of February and the 1st of August, and we accrue interest from that period end, and that takes the loan balance up to $102.8 at the end of June. Slide 7, and looking at capital expenditure, we have indicated in the past where our expectations in terms of level of sustaining capital on an average annual basis is approximately $20 million, and that still holds in terms of our medium-term view on sustaining capital. But we have, over the past number of years, been cash-constrained, and capital spend as a result has reduced. So in 2016, our capital spend was just below $7 million. We've seen in 2017 some catch-up that was needed to address that situation, and so our expectation in terms of sustaining capital for 2017 is that it'll come in at about $25 million, of which $5 million is a catch-up for prior years. In the first half of 2017, the additions to property, plant and equipment were $9.5 million, so there will be a weighting in terms of spend in the second half of the year. And of that $9.5 million, $9 million relates to sustaining capital, and $500,000 relates to expenditures we've incurred on feasibility studies, which are ongoing. And we expect to incur further costs in H2 2017 on those studies and estimate that to be in the range of about $3 million US dollars for H2 2017. Slide 15 looks at the principal debt repayments. As you know, the restructuring that was completed in July last year provided for a lower level of debt, and we have a repayment holiday on principal repayments, with the first payment beginning in February 2018 at just under $10 million. The chart charts the scheduled repayments. It excludes any repayments that might be subject to partial cash sweep on a payment date. That represents 25% of cash available for restricted payments on that payment date. And all of the debt is now denominated in US dollars. So previously we had a combination of euro and US dollars, which led to FX exposure and FX movements coming through the income statement. Now all the debt is in US dollars. That eliminates that foreign exchange component. That concludes financial advice. There are appendices included to the back of the pack if anyone has any detail that they'd like explained afterwards. I can go through that, but they're for information purposes only. So I'll hand back to Michael now.
Thanks, Deirdre. I'll just give a quick overview of how we see the outlook and the market. So if I could turn to the next slide, please, which is slide 17, mine development strategy. As you're aware, the MoMA project, the deposit at the MoMA project, occurs as a set of distinct ore zones, each with different grades and characteristics. So a strategic objective of the company is to find the best sequence of development of these ore zones, in bearing in mind the minimization of capital expenditure and maximizing output. And with that in mind, we have been developing a definitive feasibility study for the upgrade of Wet Concentrator Plant B from 2,000 tonnes per hour to 2,400 tonnes per hour, so a 20% upgrade. This is a relatively small project. The pre-feasibility study came out at about $11 million capital expenditure. The definitive feasibility study is progressing well. It's out to tender at the moment with contractors, and we hope to be able to present this to our board, and we are hopeful that the board will give us approval to implement it, and in which case this project will be implemented by this time next year. It's in terms of returns and normal investment characteristics, it's very positive. We have also, and I think we have signaled to the market previously, that we have been doing a pre-feasibility study on the development of a new mining pond at our higher grade Pilivili zone. That pre-feasibility study is progressing well. The ore body analysis, increased drilling, increased density of drilling, process test work, environmental assessment, hydrology, everything has gone very positively. It looks like a really good project. It's the pre-feasibility study is being managed by Hatch Engineering, which is a very experienced and very good engineering contractor. And that all looks positive. However, it does require some capital. And I'm pleased to say that we believe that we might have found a solution which might significantly delay capital expenditure and reduce capital expenditure from the near-term guidance that we have previously indicated with regard to capital expenditure for ongoing project development. And we are assessing that at the moment, and as Deirdre mentioned previously, we have some money allocated in the second half of this year for studies. So we'll be studying that and introducing it to the board, and as soon as we can, we will be updating the market, and we expect that to happen towards the end of the year. So we see that as good news. And if I turn to the next page, which is a market overview, that graph at the top is Kenmare's internal assessment of supply-demand balance as we look to the future. It's a result of quite a lot of work internally, where over the last several months we've been analysing every single operating, every single customer in the world in terms of pigment companies, metal manufacturing companies, etc., and all of the producing assets and all of the near producing assets. What we see is a continued balanced but slightly tight market for the next couple of years, and then sometime around 2019, the emergence of a supply deficit. And when we map up in the reasonably developable projects within that period, we still get a deficit. So that's how we see the market going forward. Quite a positive environment. We've experienced, as Deirdre said, very solid demand growth during 2017, first half 2017, and we have established contracts with all our normal customers with price increases for delivery of good levels of volume during the second half of the year. The Chinese market has, and we've written this into the press release and our previous press release, that there has been something of a hiatus in the Chinese market. We believe this has been, it's seasonal in the middle of the summer. Every year the Chinese market experiences a bit of a slowdown. There has also been a significant inventory build-up in China. China went harder and faster and reached higher price levels than the rest of the world. And as a consequence of that, traders and customers built up inventories that were higher than they necessarily needed, caused by their concern that next month it would be more expensive. And finally, in China, there is some temporary disruption caused by stricter enforcement and quite abrupt enforcement of environmental regulations, which has caused a bit of turmoil in the industry. However, we see Chinese economy continuing to grow. We see the rest of the world economy continuing to grow, and we are experiencing balanced demand growth throughout the world. And we perceive that will continue. Well, we're not quite sure exactly what's going to happen in the near term in China. Nonetheless, we consider that demand is continuing to grow there. As far as zircon is concerned, there's been a reduction in world inventory and an increase in demand, and that has allowed zircon prices to improve. Zircon volumes have improved, and again, we've experienced further price increases and larger price increases post the period end. So just to go back to our company strategy and a slide that we have mentioned, or we have presented previously with our short-term and medium-term goals. Our short-term goal is to maintain our balance sheet and generate free cash flow, and to do that through increasing our utilization rates and capturing more revenue, particularly in the zircon products, and to continue to drive down our operating costs while we do so. And we believe that during H1, we have managed to achieve all of those short-term objectives. And on the medium term, our strategic objective is to optimize our mining capacity for the market conditions and for the various ore zones that are available to us, and to do so with an optimal balance sheet by minimizing the capital expenditure associated with that process, and consequently to deliver good shareholder returns. Long-term strategy, we have a major strategic board meeting in Q3, and we will be discussing long-term strategy with the board and updating the market as post that event. So that's really all we had to say, and I'd like to hand it back to you, Hugh. You might allow people who are on the call to ask questions. I think that's our next step.
Yes, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're on the phones and you have a question, could you please press 0 and then 1 on your phone keypad now in order to enter the queue, and then after I announce you, simply say that question. And if you find that question has been answered before it's your turn to speak, just press 0 and then 2 to cancel. And while waiting for any questions from the phones, are there any questions in the room? And if you could please announce yourself for the people on the phones.
Dave Kennedy, Canaccord. Maybe Deirdre, tax guidance for this year, what would you suggest? And then maybe a question up for Eamon, who's on the phone. The TiO2 that's been taken out of China because of the environmental controls, how much has been taken out, and what do you think the impact that will have on pigment pricing?
If I take the first part of that question on tax guidance, we see in the income statement that there's a tax charge of $500,000 in the period, and that represents a profit that's generated in the mining company under the tax structure that we have. The mining company is subject to corporation tax and processing companies exempt. And that is offset by losses that we have carried forward. So we have a deferred tax asset in the balance sheet, and you'll see a $500,000 corresponding reduction in the deferred tax asset. So I'd expect H2 to be in line with that in terms of tax, and the deferred tax asset, that loss forward will get utilised against profits that are generated in the mining company. There's a 3-year carry forward on losses in Mozambique.
Thanks.
Des, just to answer your second question, it's very difficult to say precisely what that figure is, because you know it's an ongoing process that's taking place over the course of 2017. But it's fair to say that you know there's at least a couple of 100,000 tons of capacity will come out this year. I think what we're seeing is a you know a greater consolidation in the Chinese market, and you're seeing the larger producers you know operating at higher rates than in the past, and we would expect that to continue, which should have positive for pricing momentum in the market.
Thank you.
I think it's important to emphasise that we see overall demand in China continuing to increase as the Chinese economy increases. In our supply-demand balance that we presented, we have assumed that China continues to mine at a rate of about 3 million tonnes a year, which is its present rate. We're not assuming any diminishment of Chinese mining operations. On the other hand, as we speak, significant number of Chinese operations have been closed by the environmental regulations. So it's really hard to say exactly what's going to happen to us. In terms of the near term, it's in flux. In terms of the long term and medium term, demand is continuing to grow.
Just to ride on, what is the price differential between the two zircon, the secondary and the primary product?
Eamon, would you like to give...
Yeah, well, we actually have...
In terms of ratios rather than numbers...
We have three products. We have two primary products, and our main product, you know, so that's at 100%. The second primary product would be at about 75% of that, and then the third product would be at about 35 to 40% of the main product.
So
and it's that third product which we term secondary zircon.
Yes, it's essentially a tailings product which goes for reprocessing.
Sorry guys, if I could ask a question, Karen Crowley here from Davy. Thanks for your time. Just to come back to China, talked about a softening of the ilmenite price in China back in the trading statement in July, and you repeated that again this morning, and I'm slightly surprised because I had read and indeed heard that Chinese ilmenite prices had begun to stabilise in August and rise again, and this was having a positive impact on the Chinese import price for ilmenite. I'm just wondering, can you comment on that? And also, when you talk about the softness in the Chinese ilmenite price, could you perhaps quantify it? What sort of levels has the Chinese import price fallen to from its high back in H1? And the other question I have is just on cash operating costs. Do you think savings there have largely been exhausted, or the fact that you do anticipate some more savings H2 as you move from rental to old fleet utilization? Thanks.
Yeah, and then maybe I could deal with that to start with, and you could further elaborate. Can I just deal with the more simple question firstly, which is with regard to cash cost savings. Look, there's obviously a lot of diminishing returns, and we have had the bulk of savings that are easy to capture are captured earliest. But nonetheless, we do see room for additional savings in the operation, particularly with regard to procurement, and there's been a big focus on procurement, and that has not as yet provided the benefits that we expect to get from it. So there is room for further improvement, though the rate of that improvement will probably be less than previously was the case. With regard to Chinese prices, increased significantly more than anywhere else in the world. So Chinese prices were a lot higher than they were anywhere else, and then have come back down to pretty well the same levels as are available in the rest of the world. So it's not as if Chinese prices have dipped way below what we see as commonly transacted in the rest of the world. So they went higher and then they came back. In terms of increasing prices in the present environment, we have seen some of that as well. But we just have to emphasise that it's in flux at the moment, and it's hard for anybody to say exactly what's going to happen, because the next thing is somebody comes in and shuts down a pigment plant, or he comes down in and shuts down a mine. And depends on which one of those he does has a short-term effect. These shutdowns seem to be temporary. While the inspector is there, the operation is shut down, and as soon as he leaves, they restart it. So it's all temporary stuff. Eamon, do you want to elaborate on that in any way?
Well, I think you've covered it in sufficient detail, but just to add, I mean, that there has been some slight tick-up in the Chinese domestic price in recent weeks, and very, very modest, though. I think, as you say, with regards to the environmental inspections, it's creating a lot of uncertainty for pigment plants, and therefore they're being more cautious in their buying behaviour because they don't know if they're going to face a closure for a few weeks in their pigment production, and therefore they're running down their inventories and being more cautious about buying. But typically in China, we do see demand picking up in September through to November. It's one of the peak production periods. And so we're hoping that we will see increased buying behaviour in that period.
And Eamon, Jeremy speaking here, if I could just add to that as well, it's important to recognise the difference between spot sales in China and imported prices in terms of the timing lag. So if you have a shipment to China that's sent from Africa, you have to agree that spot shipment, then you have to agree for the ship to be there to obviously fill and then transport to China. So by the time the reported prices come in, you have a lagging effect in the price, whereas if somebody's buying in China, that material could be delivered within a week or so, and so you've got much less of a lag in terms of the price indication.
Fundamentally, demand in China is increasing.
Yes, Roger Bell from Hahnemann Partners. I just wanted to ask if you could elaborate a little bit more on the sort of lower capex mining optimization options. And am I right in saying that the previous guidance was up to $100 million for both the expansion of WCPB and the addition of WCPD? Therefore, you're looking at lower than 100, essentially what you're saying is new guidance. And also, the move to Pilibili, what kind of impact could that have on the grade, and would you need any additional mining license on that deposit? I think I read somewhere it was only an exploration license.
So, let me start with the last one. We're fully permitted for Pilibili, and that whole process is working very smoothly with government, and naturally, as you complete your environmental work, you then have to get that approved, and so there are further steps to take, but the license is in good standing. And yes, you're correct with regard to previous indications of the potential capital involved. We did mention that it would be somewhere around $100 million, and that expenditure would come on in the near term, and we are hoping to achieve less than that. On the other hand, it is premature for us to really elaborate any further on it, because it's a developing concept. We have to introduce it further, we have to do more studies, but our hope is to reduce and delay capital expenditure below that level.
And the impact on the grades by moving?
So as we complete the mine path in Namalope of Wet Concentrator Plant A and B, experience some diminishment of grade, and that would be balanced by the development of Pilibili, which is a higher grade zone.
So in the meantime, grades are declining. What's the sort of speed at which the grades are declining? Because they've held up relatively well in the last few periods. presumably helped your costs. So
I think it's about a 15% decline in grade as we move towards the end of Namalok.
Yeah, something in that region.
So a total of 15 per annum.
No, 15 in total. But it's not a, you know, it's not a continuing diminishing grade. It's, it dips down a bit and stays at a lower level.
Good. And then can I just ask on China again? Lock in your H2 pricing at a point when Chinese spot prices were at their peak and now they've come off. So if you were to have to renegotiate today, hypothetically, are you still sort of back on it? If we were to start renegotiating for H1 next year today, would you be looking for a further increase in contract prices?
Yeah, look, we're experiencing very solid demand from all of our Western customers, and we are hopeful that we see in H1 2018 improvement in prices from what we presently have.
And have you seen any beneficial impact from the shutdowns in China, the pigment plants, as in that's opened a gap in the market for the Western plants?
No, I don't think that you could say that as yet. It's possible that might be the case, but a clear picture has not yet emerged.
I think it's also worth noting that the majority of pigment plants outside of China are operating at pretty much the highest levels they're able to. So I don't think there's a lot of spare capacity out there for them to boost production.
You don't see some of the ones that were shuttered coming back on?
Pigment plants, Eamon?
It's unlikely that the smaller ones will restart because they're the ones that the government has gone after because they're the biggest polluters. So unlikely. As I said earlier, we'd expect, you know, more consolidation to take place, you know, bigger plants to be operating at higher rates in the future, and smaller plants to slowly fall away, or quickly fall away, in fact, if based on what we're seeing this year in the market with the new regulations.
And any of the ones in the West that were kind of shut down, do you think they have the potential to restart?
It's unlikely because, I mean, shutting a plant down in the West, you know, there has been a couple of closures in Europe, but it's a very slow process to shut them down, and then once they're shut, those plants, their sites are rehabilitated. So it's unlikely, very unlikely, I have to say.
Thank you.
There is some new capacity. I mean, Chemours is doing an expansion at its Mexican plant, and some of that is entering the market this year, and they'll continue to ramp that up into 2018. Apart from that, that's the only real expansion in the West that we see out there. And that's a 200,000 ton expansion, but as I said, that's over the course of 2 years. And they're also, as part of that, they have shut down an older plant in the US, the Edgemore plant, which had a capacity of somewhere around 80 to 90,000 tons. So their net capacity addition is only maybe 120, 130, or even less.
Deidre, Paul Regan, VSA Capital. Referring to slide 15, I was just wondering, at current product prices, what would the impact of the cash sweeps be on that chart?
In terms of the cash sweep, say it's the amount that is subject to cash sweep, if it's 25% of a cash balance, that is the restricted payments at a particular payment date. So in terms of the quantum of that, I think in early 17 at current prices, that would be low, and it would increase in terms of amount for August 18. But it is subject to the cash balance building up.
So that would accelerate your debt payment coming off, or?
It would come off in terms of the payment at the end. That would get accelerated forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hugh, perhaps we could take some questions from people on the phone if you have a queue of people on the phone.
Well, if anyone has any questions on the phones, please press 0 and then 1 now. At the moment, there's nothing on the phones. Are there further questions in the room?
Michael, Richard Morgan, Miraba. Just that you mentioned earlier that you'd be hopeful that H1 18 pricing will be higher than what you currently have. Will that also be higher than what you've secured for H2 of this year, or would H2 represent something of a peak in the current quarters, notwithstanding the fact that from 2019 onwards, you know, the looming supply gap may obviously change the dynamics?
I'm hopeful that we improve from our H2 numbers
right.
H1.
Okay.
Eamon, what's your view?
Yes, I think we would expect to see some improvement as well. I mean, the outlook, the general outlook is for supply to be generally quite tight, or, you know, certainly balanced, and, you know, with some tightness over the course of the next 18 months. So I think we would expect to see further price uplift.
And particularly in zircon, Richard? Mm. Or,
yeah, I mean, I was really referring to ilmenite, but the zircon dynamic, I think, is even better, yeah.
What would your target be? You're aiming for more primary zircon. What is your kind of balance that you're looking for, you think you can get, sort of percentage-wise, primary versus secondary?
Ben, I don't know if you're available to comment on that. If you are, you could comment, and otherwise I'll make a comment.
Good morning, everybody. I think right now it's actually hard to tell how far we will be able to take it, but certainly I see it around another 10% shift as being something that we can do. But it's obviously subject. The difficulty with this is that as you keep doing process improvements, you have to make sure that you don't rob one improvement with the next improvement. So you can't tell where you're at until each improvement has been put in place. So I'd be fairly conservative in giving you a prediction on that one.
And just to add, Jeremy, I think it's also worth noting, although it's a more subtle improvement, is that the quality of our primary zircon has also been going up there. So the amount of standard that we've been producing has been increasing relative to our special. And as Eamon pointed out earlier, the special goes at a 25% discount to the standard. And so that's also been helping in pushing up our zircon prices received average primary, in addition to the fact that the zircon market is also very strong right now. So I think that's some important work that the operations team have been doing.
So primary, the primary products versus the secondary, what did you run at in which one?
I don't have the percentage split in front of me, but I can give you the number.
I missed the question. What was the question?
So what was the relationship between primary and secondary in H1? And no, I don't have it here.
I'll come back to you on that just now.
In H1, we had 12,000 tons of secondary. So of the 38,000, 12,000 tons of that was secondary.
Anyone else got any questions? So if not, we will bring the call to a close. So thank you very much indeed for your help, Hugh, and thank everyone on the phone for listening in. And I'd particularly like to thank everybody here for making effort onto the Buchanan's office to listen to this results presentation. So thanks, everyone, and bye.
This now concludes today's call. Thank you all very much for attending, and you can now disconnect your line.